Session number 789.
Mr. A.W. Phillips, Reel 7. Was there any particular group of Indians from any particular region who the troops didn't like very much? You said that the troops liked the Gurkhas very much. Was there any particular group which the troops were not very fond of?
No, I don't think so, because we didn't come into contact with the others so much as we did with the Gurkhas, because the Sikhs were mostly the mountain battery, and of course they were well away from us. We didn't have any contact with them because they worked entirely on their own, you see, apart from us. And the Camel Corps, of course, they were on their own because obviously the transport wasn't with us all the time. We were on the move and the transport was well behind, so we didn't see much of those fellas either. But we didn't, we wouldn't, you know, we'd have talked to them if they'd, if it'd been the opportunity. But there again, you see, you're always a sort of afraid of the language, because the language down south was different to that up north.
Did you ever learn any Indian languages?
Well, to tell you the honest truth, I didn't worry, because I said to myself, the army's not for me. And once I leave India, whatever I learn here will be of no use to me. I could say Tyra with Tora, which is wait a minute, or get the budgie high, what's the time? Or if up north you say Bat and they stop. And Pawnee Leo, we're going to get some water. That sort of thing. Little sentences that you know is necessary during the day. But otherwise, Oh, you didn't trouble. There was one fellow that surprised me. We got up in mess pot, as they call it, that time. There was a fellow there. I went into the canteen. There was an Arab there, and this fellow was talking to him in Arabic. In Arabic, and I said, "Where the diggers did you learn that?" So he said, "Well, if you couldn't speak what they call the London language, you know, the
Cockney.
Slang. Some London slang. If you could know that, you could speak almost any language in the world." Now, that was peculiar, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And there was a case of another man that we lost sight of. We thought he was a proper duffer. And yet, when we got on the frontier and I wanted a new pair of boots, I had to go into this tent, and this fellow that we thought was a proper duffer, he was in charge of all these natives with the boots and stuff, and talking to them in their own lingo. Peculiar, though.
Did you notice much difference between the people in North India compared to the people in South India?
Oh, Lord, yes, my goodness, up north they were more aggressive than those in the south. And I know that, well, I thought I was fairly tall, but these fellows were great big fellows, these Sikhs, were they? I don't know where they were. But I know they were the friendly ones, but they didn't look friendly, you know, if you approached them anyway. But they were very big fellas, and we always had the impression that they weren't all that favourable to the whites. You know, that you got that feeling.
Those in North India.
That's right. Yeah. So, oh, they're very, very different to those in the south. More sturdy, and that, you know.
So did you feel that the people in South India were more pro-British, more in favour of the British?
Well, I don't think they worked it anyway. I mean, they just took things as they were, and you know that. There was no ill feeling of any sort, as far as I could make out. I mean that they accepted us, we accepted them, and that was all there was to it. Whether the same thing happened with the regular soldiers there, I don't know. Might have been totally different, but as I say, I think we were different. A different class. Not, I don't mean that snobbishly, but you know that they'd got good backgrounds, a lot of the fellows that they got good jobs, and the mechanical fellows and that sort of thing, where perhaps they weren't in the regular army. So that, you know, the atmosphere was rather different between the us and the black people. They just accepted us, and we accepted them, and that was all there was to it.
Did you ever get out into the countryside on things like shooting parties?
I only went out once shooting. That was at a place called Hebble. That was outside. That was the proper target practice place at Hebble, and that was it wasn't too good when we were out there because it rained pretty well. But we used to have these competitions of knocking plates down, you know. But
this was near Bangalore.
That was at Hebble, yeah, near Bangalore. Yeah, we used to go there for a fortnight shooting, and well, that was very interesting because I really like shooting. And but the funny part was, you'd perhaps have a team of six or eight, you see, and as you knocked your plate down, the opposite man on the other side had to fall out, you see. Well, we looked at that lot, and we used to say, well, so-and-so is the best shot. So we all fired on his... on the one, say it was number two, we all fired on number two to knock him out first. The tricks of the trade, you know. It's funny. But that was very interesting, knock these plates down, see who could win, who could get them both down.
You seem to have taken quite a bit of interest whilst you were in India, in Indian arts and customs.
Yeah.
What did you think of them, generally speaking?
In what way?
Well, what was your opinion of, say, Indian sculpture and so on? You saw.
Well, if the Taj Mahal was anything to go by, I should say that their work was really magnificent. Because I've never seen anything like it. It's all white marble, you know, pure white marble, and the great blue sky. It's really magnificent. But I don't remember seeing a great deal of Indian art, come to think of it. There was one or two of these little chatty... there's only one thing about the that was interesting, that the churches. Their churches, or mosques, or whatever you like to call them, with the number of figures that are cut out sky high. And, I mean, it must have taken years to sculpt or whatever, however they did it, because the moss and that are really magnificent, the carvings. So they must be pretty good at that sort of thing.
Did you feel that there was any difference between the Indians you came across in the towns to those who lived in the countryside? Or did you just feel they were all the same?
Well, you felt the low caste, they were all the same, you know, the farmers and all that, and in the town. It was the, as I say, the Parsis that were different. They mostly come from Persia. And they were, some of them were practically white. You see some of them here in their saris, but they are practically white. Well, they're Parsi, they're not actually, I don't know whether they class themselves as Indians or not, but I suppose they do. But they were always very well dressed, whereas, of course, the lower caste Indians, of course, they didn't wear such flowing robes and that as the Parsis.
When you were going about these Indian towns, like Bangalore or Ferozpur or whatever, did you ever feel uneasy?
No. No, I never felt uneasy. Not so much as when I went to South Africa. I felt uneasy there, walking the streets at night, but not out there.
Why do you think that was, that you didn't feel uneasy in India?
I don't know whether I was young at that time and didn't realise anything could happen to you. I mean, I can remember being out one night when the stars were shining and I was all on my own coming across them from the town, but I don't remember ever feeling that, you know, that I could be attacked or anything of that sort. It never entered my head.
Did you even feel that in the frontier towns?
Oh, well, you're safe there because the frontier towns are all walled and loopholed. The Deir Ismail Khan, that was one of the towns that we went into, and also Tank. They're all surrounded by tremendously high, thick walls. And they can shut the gate at night and you can't get in into the city at all. Sungur Patan is another one. You see, you can't get into those places when the gates are shut because the walls are too high and solid. They're all fortified towns.
But you didn't feel in any danger from the inhabitants of Deir Ismail Khan?
Oh, no. They're in there, they're safe, and we're in there and we're safe. That's all there is to it. I mean, if there was any attack of any sort in a town like that, they're in there. They haven't got to chase all over the countryside to catch people. If someone attacks you, they've only got to go around the town to find them. That's the way I looked at it. But I never felt any alarm of any sort.
Did you ever come across any hostility from any Indians?
No.
You said in your autobiography that you've felt there was a bit of hostility once in a place called Guntakel, where you changed trains when you were going to Pune.
Oh yes, that is yes, that was when we had to change trains again, Guntakel, that's right, yeah. Well, there we went out and had we thought we'd have a walk down the village, but the women there was in a good state of undress, and so and the men was eyeing us pretty well, so we turned around and came back. So we didn't see much of the place. But that was the only place we saw women very nearly naked. So evidently I could imagine it was a real Indian village and there wasn't a white man to be seen anywhere.
And you felt that it was because of these half-naked women that the men were hostile.
That's right. Well, they looked hostile. But we wouldn't chance it. We wouldn't go any further. And we saw what was in their minds. So we just turned around and came back. Not that it mattered very much because it was pretty hot, I'll tell you.
I think you said earlier that you had hardly any contact with European civilians in India.
No.
You hardly ever came across them?
No.
Did you ever come across civil servants or police or railwaymen?
No. Most of the police that I saw were native police. But I don't ever remember seeing a white policeman.
What about missionaries? Did you come across white missionaries?
Well, I suppose they would be from the church. But I can't say that I ever came across any of them. The only time that I ever saw a minister was in church, and I can't say that I remember seeing him outside at all. But all those things are foggy now after all this time. You know, you don't remember everything like that you would like to.
Can you remember meeting any Anglo-Indians?
Yes, you see, we met Anglo-Indians, all right. Nearly had a fight in one of the concert parties.
Why was that?
Well, two of us, we got our seats there. We could pay for them, of course. And we both got up to go to the toilet. And when we came back, these two half-castes, as we called them, were in our seats. And we told them to get out. And a bit of a rumpus before we got them out. But there was that feeling between us and them. There was an antagonistic feeling between us and the half-castes. because they, it seemed to me, felt that they were better than we were. I don't know where they got the impression from, but simply because I suppose on one side of their appearances, one of their parents was white. That's the only thing I could think of. Anglo-Indians, of course, they are half-caste, aren't they? And they always gave the impression that they... Well, it's like the natives of Africa now. They're, you know, they're beginning to show that they don't think much of you, that sort of thing, as a white person. That's what it seemed like to me.
Did you come to blows on that occasion?
Oh, no. Well, no. It very nearly did. Until, well, we were going to pick them up and sling them out. And then the stewards came round and wanted to know what all the trouble was about. And we did eventually get them out. But it's the sort of thing you don't like. But the funny part was they seemed to think they were more entitled to the seats than we were. We paid for them. So I don't know whether they paid for theirs or not, or where they came from.
Did you come across Indian Christians?
No.
So there were no Indian Christians in the churches you went to? It was was it just for the soldiers?
That's right, soldiers in the... What population?
Did you think that it was odd or natural for British troops to be in India?
Well, I don't know quite. Never entered my head whether I should be there or not. I know the first Sussex, the first Sussex regulars, were always reckoned to be the Frontier Regiment, North West Frontier Regiment. But no, it never entered my head that. You know, at that time, of course, as you get older, you think about these things and you wonder. But at that time, I should say, we didn't think, you know, one way or the other, whether we should be there or not. Just the case that we'd been sent there, and that's all there was to it.
So why did you think that British troops were there in India?
Well, because we'd conquered the place, hadn't we? But the funny part was that I don't know why Mysore was given independence in 1881, that was. Whether any other state was given independence, I don't know. But it must have been for some reason, because there's no doubt that the Maharajas of old gave a lot of money to the British in the, you know, in certain things, wars and that sort of thing. But no, can't.
Did you think that British rule was a good thing or a bad thing for India?
Well, I don't know. It's lots of sorting out that, doesn't it?
I mean, what?
I should think it's a good thing, because you've got the English language now, which is universal, isn't it? There's no doubt about it. I mean, it don't matter who you speak to or on television or anything. I mean, you find that nearly everybody can speak English. So that it may have done a bit of good that way, because they all speak English as well as their own language, you see. So,
I mean, whilst you were in India, yeah, at that time, did you think that British rule was a good thing for India?
Well, to tell you the honest truth, I didn't think of it in any way, because I wasn't that interested in whether it was good for them or not, because I knew that I wouldn't stop there. I was in there, and I should be out in a year or two. So that really, it didn't interest me whether it was right or wrong. It was just that we were there, and that was all there was to it.
Did you enjoy being in India?
Oh yes, I'd never been abroad before, and I mean, everything was so different that you know, you wanted to get out and see everything, and you knew very well that you'd, well, in the life that I'd lead. I mean, I'd never like to go there again. So that you wanted to see all that you could. That's why I looked at it.
And
you didn't trouble about politics or any of that sort of thing. You just soldiers there for the time being. That was all there was to it.
Did you regret leaving India, or were you glad to get out?
Oh, I was glad to get out. It's the same with South Africa. If you go there, you still want to come home. Yeah? No place like England, in my opinion.
Whilst you were in India as a soldier, did you expect British rule to end soon? Did you think that British rule was going to end soon whilst you were in India?
No, never had it in my head. No, never thought anything about it.
Did you think that it was ever going to end?
Well, you see, the point is, we were sent there, and politically, I never thought of anything like that. I mean, I was interested in the sights that I could see, and that was as far as I went. I had no political idea of India at all. I did feel that the Maharaja's palaces were rather, what shall I say, enormous in compared to the slums that the Indians around them. Slummies, you know, it made you wonder whether something couldn't be done by these Maharaja with all their money for the people in the state, which of course I believe they've done now. They've taken away a lot of their authority and that, and I don't know, I haven't been there again, of course, so there may be quite a different atmosphere in the country now to what there was then.
Who did the British soldiers think was responsible for the poverty that existed in India?
Well, a lot of it was put down to what the British took out, and a lot of what the Maharajas had got. I mean, there, the palace we went into, I mean, it was just terrific. I mean, the stuff there must have cost not thousands but millions. You see, there's all these poor Indians all around with these shacks and that makes you feel that. I didn't think of it at the time, but thinking of it now, that something should be done to clear things up a bit, which it seems the government, since we got out, has done.
You say you didn't take really very much interest in Indian politics. Mm. Is that right?
Yes, I didn't. I never thought politically in those days at all.
Whilst you were a soldier in India, had you heard of Gandhi?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't remember the name, only when I came home. I suppose he was in existence then, I suppose.
Was he?
Yes. I don't know.
Yes, he was in India the same time you were there.
He was? Mm. Oh, well, I don't...
But you hadn't heard of him whilst you were in India.
Well, the trouble was, you see, we didn't get newspaper that like we get here, so that you didn't really know what was taking place in the country, really.
Didn't you see British or Indian newspapers at all?
I don't remember ever seeing a newspaper out there, honestly.
What about the troubles in the Punjab in 1919 whilst you were there? Who did you think was responsible for that?
Well, I wasn't there at the time. You see, the battalion was up there, but of course I'd left them then.
No, you were in Pune.
That's right, I was in Pune. The only thing that I could think of was that, once again, it was the students that was some trouble with them. But... what it was all about, I just don't know at the moment.
Had you heard of Indian political parties?
No.
Whilst you were there? No. You didn't know the names of any Indian political parties?
No, not at all.
I think in 1919, when you left India, you were demobilised in India, weren't you?
Well, no, I was demobilised actually at Crystal Palace in England.
Uh-huh. I see. Mm-hmm. But wasn't there some trouble in 1919 amongst the troops whilst you were waiting to go home?
Oh, yes, because when we came in from Basra to Bombay, we expected to get on the ship for home in Bombay. But they told us they were going to take us just outside Bombay, which was 200 miles away. And, of course, the troops got a bit upset about it, but the commander's wife came in and talked to us one night, and she was very nice. She knew that we wanted to get home, naturally. And she was very nice, and she said, all right, she said, three days' time you'll be away. And 3 days' time we were away. But Doolally was, I'll say, 200 miles from Bombay, and there was nothing there of any interest at all. It had been a purely military town for years. Doolally, everybody knows Doolally, Doolally Tap and all the rest of it. And there was nothing there of interest at all. Just a bleak sort of town. And that's what I'll say, just outside Bombay, 200 miles.
Had some promise been made to you about being sent home as soon as you got back from Basra? Had they broken some promise? Is this why the troops were discontented?
Well, no, not exactly. It's just what we expected, but we didn't get. They said you're going home. That's all there was to it, you see. You'll be demobbed in England. And that was all there was to it. We expected more than we were getting. We thought we'd get into Bombay and straight away on the ship, you see, but of course we didn't.
So it was just a question of the fact that you knew the war had ended.
That's right, as far as we were concerned,
You wanted to be home.
Of course, after the signing of the treaty, 1918, of course, it's...
You were just saying, Mr. Phillips, that... at the time of the armistice in 1918.
Oh yes, when it was signed, of course I was up in Mespot, it was called then. Of course, it was practically a holiday at that time. But
so all this contributed to the expectation of the troops that they should go home to England
that's
pretty
right.
quickly.
Yes,
and
yes.
This is why the discontent.
Yes.
Developed.
Well, I thought that I should have been rather a long time getting away because they grouped us, you know, those builders and that sort of thing, in one class one, but in my trade printing it was 10, so I didn't expect to get away too soon. But evidently it was the fact that I'd been called up with the territory that made that difference, you see, so I got away pretty quickly.
They must have grouped them, presumably.
They did group them, yes.
According to how
that's right.
important they would be to the economy.
That's right, yes, yes. Builders and that sort of thing, the first miners and that sort of thing, you know, the first grade.
And your trade was?
10.
What was your printing?
So I didn't. I got away much quicker than I expected, but very good.
Was your passage back to England very similar to your passage out to India?
Oh yes, pretty well the same. Yes,
on a troop ship.
Yes, on a troop ship, except that there was some white women came on board with us, and of course they were all eyes, so they cleared off, but.
And then women,
evidently, I should imagine business people, you know, why they're business people. And another thing, when we came back, we came up the Suez Canal, and you know, all the way up was the porpoise in front of the boat, all the way up and over. Yeah, very, very peculiar. And then, of course, we passed the U-boat 46 that had been captured by us, and I don't know where they were going to, where they passed us going the other way. In the Suez Canal. And then when we got at the other end, there was a lot of boat funnels sticking out of the water. All these boats had been sunk by the, I don't know, Well, evidently by the Japanese. And the Japanese were on their side, though, weren't they, at that time, I believe. There were Japanese boats that were sunk anyway, and all these fellows were sticking up all over in the water. Very peculiar.
What was your reaction when you saw England again after so many years?
I remember all the girls on the quayside. We were all exuberant, oi, oi! And then you see what was that. They all disappeared pretty quickly. But as I say, I saw all these helmets going floating down the river, and I thought to myself, well, I don't know, better go down and get my good one, or, you know, to see if I can keep it. And when I got down, it disappeared, so that was down the river as well. So, there you are.